Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Second half of the program begins right now. Seth the Chump's coming up at 1. Mike Wilner from the Fan 590 in Toronto. Talk about the Royals and Jays, but we start here with the two-minute drill around the country, 2 minutes at a time, talking to the people, covering the stories where they're happening. Makes sense to me. Derek Wetmore, ESPN 1500 in Minneapolis, Minnesota, is up first. Derek, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Seren. How are you doing?
Not bad. T-Wolves like the deal for Jimmy Butler. T-Wolf fans, I guess I should say, like the deal for Jimmy Butler.
Well, I think that they do, it mostly because it means they're probably a playoff team, and the Wolves haven't been that for 11 seasons. I think that some people are a little hesitant to give up on the potential of a guy like Zach LaVine, but it's pretty hard to argue when you're saying this will make you at least the eighth seed in the West to a team that's been, you know, starving for that opportunity for more than a decade now. So I think overall Timberwolves fans are – I think they're on board with it.
Yeah, and why wouldn't they be? Or is losing a Zach LaVine or a Chris Dunn or a Lauri Markkanen, all the pieces that were in the deal, is there any part of that that they're like, well, I like it, but I wish we could have hung on to this guy?
Yeah, to me it's LaVine. I'm not too sold on Chris Dunn as an NBA point guard, and I think Lauri Markkanen comes with his flaws, even though I thought he was a great college basketball player. I loved watching him at Arizona. There's just too much potential in Zach LaVine. I think that, you know, he improved his three-point shooting. You've obviously seen his high wire act in the dunk contest. And I think he's just an impressive player that continued to improve his game. So the upside is there with that. But you had a guy, a defensive-minded player who's also, I mean, it sounds weird to say at 27, but Jimmy Butler's a veteran. And especially for this group with Tom Thibodeau, it's been proven to work in the past. And I think that he is sort of that piece that'll put them in that equation. Whereas I'm not 100% sold that just internal upgrades would have put the Wolves over that proverbial hump and got them into the playoffs. Now, I think Karl Towns is a great player, and I think he'll be, you know, one of this generation's best. But the surrounding cast was basically all young except for Ricky Rubio. And now you add another veteran and it's just an upgrade, basically all the places that the Timberwolves needed. But also importantly, veteran. I get annoyed with the cliche, Seren. I don't know if you're the same way. You just hear people talk about veteranness like it's the only thing that matters.
Right.
But in this case, there really is something to be said for it for a young Timberwolves team that needs it desperately. I think Jimmy Butler adds the piece that they needed.
Yeah, I agree with that. It does apply to the Timberwolves. It gets overused, but it does apply here. And there's some reports that Thibodeau didn't get along with Jimmy Butler, that Butler was thrilled that Thibodeau was gone. Where does their relationship stand?
Actually, I haven't heard the latest on that. I'd be really curious to see. Thibodeau didn't, he's not going to expound on that in the press conference on draft night. And apparently, according to Dwayne Wade's Instagram account, Jimmy Butler's in Paris, France right now, so could not be available to the Twin Cities media. I'm curious to see how that develops. There was, of course, the reports last week, you know, whether Cleveland was in play for a Jimmy Butler trade or Boston might have been in play. But Butler reportedly said that he didn't want to go to Cleveland, so that was interesting to me. I'm curious to see how their relationship does play out. And I was talking to somebody, avid Wolves fan, the other day about this idea that maybe when players are young, they like playing for Thibodeau because he sort of makes them into the player they'll become, like in Jimmy Butler's case or Joakim Noah or anything like that. But then when you sort of made it in the NBA, do you want to go back and play for him? I don't know what the answer is, but I'm just as curious as you to find out.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out in the long run. All right, Twins and Indians. Last stand for the Minnesota Twins to prove that they are a challenger or no?
Well, they're such a weird team, Seren, because they've got two starters at the top that you really like. Irvin Santana's having a great year, and Jose Barrios is proving that his prospect status wasn't all hot air. You got those two guys that you trust, and after that, it's just you're cycling through people trying to figure out if you can pitch. I think if you could add a third pitcher, you'd feel a lot better about the Twins' chances, but short of them being able to do that, I'm not sure they keep up this contender status all summer long. This could be an important series for them as sort of a mid to late June measuring stick against the now division leaders.
Because if they are going to fall out, they need to know that sooner rather than later so that they can move a guy like Irvin Santana, right?
There are a lot of guys on this Twins team that if they fell out of contention, I'd be really curious to see what the return is. Irvin Santana's at the top of that list. Some contender could use him in a postseason series. Brian Dozier could be on that list. Brandon Kinsler, their closer. Robbie Grossman's having a really great year. Quietly one of the best on-base threats in baseball. They just have a lot of guys. Kenny Vargas could draw some interest as a power-hitting switch hitter. I don't know exactly if they are going to fall out of it, and if they do, if it's going to be a fire sale. But they do have some pieces that would make it interesting to see if they could reboot this rebuild pretty quickly. If they just kind of hang around, Seren, I think that's the worst case for them because you can't really justify selling everybody. And you're also probably not going to go all in to treat yourself like a World Series contender. So they kind of have to go one way or the other. Got about a month to figure that out here.
Derek Wetmore in Minneapolis. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Seren. You too. Sacramento,
where you at? Grant Napier, 1140 KHTK, and of course the voice of the Kings is next here in the program. Grant, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Let's start before we get to the trade part of the two picks that the Kings had. Anybody disappointed that they didn't, or was there even any truth to the rumor that the Lakers were looking to peel down from number two? Did anybody want that as opposed to what they ended up doing?
No, nobody wanted that. The Kings were going to take De'Aaron Fox regardless of whether they were first, second, third, or fourth. That's the guy they wanted. And they felt fairly confident that there was a good chance that De'Aaron Fox would be there for them at five. So there was no reason to make that deal. So, no, everyone that I talked to on my show and via social media, they were very happy the Kings said no to that rumor.
And why De'Aaron Fox? Why did they – and I don't necessarily disagree that he isn't going to be the best point guard of the bunch. Why do they think he is?
Well, the Kings have been starving for a young point guard. They really haven't. That's been maybe their most glaring weakness during this struggle over the last decade. They just absolutely fell in love with his workout when he came out here. They obviously like what they saw at Kentucky. We all know what his one weakness is, and that is his shot, which is not atypical for a young one-and-done coming into the NBA. I see a lot of guys, and I don't know how that could possibly be. I'm still waiting for a basketball expert to explain to me why so many guys come into the NBA and they're poor shooters, and a lot of them become good shooters. So, you know, if he can get that part of his game down, then I think, you know, he's pretty close to a can't miss. But they liked everything about him. They liked the way he plays defense. They liked his leadership. They liked his attitude. Dave Yeager told me, the coach of the Kings, that De'Aaron Fox reminded him of a young Mike Conley who we had when he coached Memphis.
Why is he not just another Rajon Rondo when you talk about the problem with the shot?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball any more than you do. Rajon Rondo is a veteran, and we have a bigger sample of work. I can't answer that question. You know, Jason Kidd came into the league, and he couldn't put the ball in the ocean if he was standing on the bow of a cruise ship. You know, he turned into a really good shooter. Then there are guys like Ricky Rubio who, you know, until the last 6 weeks of the season, you know, he had not improved his shot. You know, John Wall, if you look at Game 7 against Boston, what was their big nemesis? He couldn't make a three. I don't know. You know, we'll find out in a couple of years. If he can't become a better shooter, then the Kings may look back and regret taking him at five. But if, and again, if, because I've talked to a lot of coaches, they don't feel that De'Aaron Fox's shot mechanically is flawed. And so for that reason, they have a pretty good confidence factor that they're going to be able to get it to where they want it.
Okay. Yeah, and look, I like the way it looks a hell of a lot more than I like the way Lonzo Ball's shot looks.
Lonzo's got a hitch in his shot, you know, and he can't shoot going to the right. Now, again, that doesn't mean that he won't be able to learn that. You know, I think a lot of times fans expect these young players that come into the NBA to be, you know, complete. They're years away from being complete. You know, I said this on my radio show. I don't see, maybe with the exception of one, and this is it was supposed to be a great draft. I see maybe two, maybe three of these first-round draft picks having a real impact on their teams. You know, it takes a while.
Yeah, agreed. All right, they move 10 to Portland, get 15 and 20, and take Jared Jackson from Carolina and Harry Giles from Duke. And, You know, to me, I would think that Giles is kind of the intriguing one. 24 months ago, he was the expected number one overall pick in this draft. Knee injuries have been the problem. Is that where the value really lies in this trade, is if they hit with Giles?
No question. No, there's no question. I talked to the Kings medical staff last night because the first question I asked them was about his knees. And they said his knees checked out really, really well. There's no arthritis in it. There's no they think that his knees are going to be fine. He's still in a what you would call, for lack of a better term, you know, rehabbing, you know, one of those knees. But they feel very confident. And again, it's always an if when you draft. You never know. But if the knees are not an issue, I've been reading from people that think the Kings got the steal of the draft, that, you know, had it not been for the knees, this guy may have been a top five pick or one of the best players in the draft. So I think at 20, that's a good gamble, because here's the other deal a lot of fans forget. Most of our audience, both in Sacramento and where you are and around the country, they don't know who Bogdan Bogdanovic is. Well, he's one of the best players in Europe, maybe the best shooter in Europe, and he's coming over. He was part of the Marquise Chris deal last year, and he is a top-flight two-guard, and so he's coming over. So really, the Kings not only get the players that we've mentioned, and they get Frank Mason out of Kansas, who I absolutely love, and I'm shocked he didn't go in the first round. Now they have Bogdan Bogdanovic coming over. The things are on an upswing in Sacramento.
Yeah, and I'm with you on Frank Mason. I thought he had a shot to slide into the bottom of the first round. He doesn't. He goes 34 just after the first round ends. But do they, you know, what kind of upside are you hearing from SAC people as to what he can be in the league?
He's probably the most ready NBA player of any of the players that we've talked about with the Kings. I mean, I really believe Frank Mason could step onto an NBA floor right now and help a team. Now, I'm not talking about as a starter, but I think he's probably the most ready to come in and get minutes. They like everything about him. Not only did they bring him in once, they were so impressed with him the first time, they brought him in for a second workout. And Vlade Divac, the Kings general manager, told me last night that he was amazed that he was still on the board at 34. And when 34 came, it was the euphoria in the room. They're thrilled to get Frank Mason. They are absolutely thrilled that they're getting a player that did so much last year in his senior year at Kansas.
Grant Napier in Sacramento. Great stuff, buddy. Hopefully, am I going to see you in Tahoe?
Yeah, I look forward to it. We'll be there for sure.
Sounds good. Take care. Have a great weekend.
Yep, we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Be well.
You don't know by now. I'm talking about Chi-Town.
Josh List, 780 BBM in Chicago, Illinois, is next. Josh, how are you?
I am hanging in there.
What are Bulls fans thinking about this deal? Jimmy Butler going to the Minnesota Timberwolves for Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, the number 7 pick they use on Lauri Markkanen. Good deal, bad deal from Chicago's perspective?
Yeah, the initial reaction is super cynical and sour. I think there are long-term Bulls supporters who are less vocal about it that are willing to accept this deal as, all right, Butler wasn't the star we thought he was. He's either overrated or underrated, not properly rated. Let's get rid of him. Let's just hit the reboot button. So Jimmy Butler is the guy, but this is sort of a rebuild years in the making. Once the bloom, so to speak, fell off the Derrick Rose-led Bulls, Butler sort of became the de facto star, and he has built his game up to something of an all-star level for three-time all-star, but he can't necessarily carry the team deep into the playoffs by himself. I think that's what a lot of fans are believing. And so the out loud ones are disappointed because they think the Bulls should have gotten a whole lot more. And the ones who are still supporting the team understand that Butler's trade was a long time coming. He was a late first round pick who overexceeded his expectations anyway. They got the most out of him. So let's go a little bit younger and let's go with the guy we think may be one of the top rated players in the draft, a 7-footer who's a stretch big man who had the highest 3-point shooting percentage among big men in college last year. And that's sort of both sides of it.
Yeah, and they get, you know, I think 2 lottery picks. I want to say LaVine at 13, I think he was, would have been a lottery pick.
Yeah.
They get him.
Yeah, Dunn was 5 last year.
Yeah, and Dunn was 5 last year. I mean, is this just basically that Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade are one more and the door? I know Wade locked in. Are they maybe even disappointed that he locked in and that they're not more into the full-blown rebuild mode right now?
Yeah, I think Dwayne Wade is still likely, like he has revealed and informed the Bulls, and he's got a few days until the deadline to officially say yes to that player option worth over $23 million for next year. Rajon Rondo is, according to multiple sources, a little less likely to return than he was when the offseason began, and that's after exit meetings with Wade and Jimmy Butler. So we'll see how the Bulls continue to weigh those exit meetings when it comes to deciding on Rondo in the near future. And here's one thing to remember. A year ago, the Bulls were allegedly on some sort of agreement. If they were going to trade Butler last year, they would have gotten just Dunn and LaVine in a reported possible swap. Well, this year they got a little bit more for them. So by waiting, they end up being able to move up 9 or 10 spots in the draft, get those two players and the college prospect they wanted. So they did get a little bit more this year by waiting a year with them.
Fred Hoiberg's name came up real quick when Ohio State's job opened up. How solid is he there in Chicago now?
No, he's absolutely solid. He's bought him a few more years to see if he can grow this young class, see if they can mold, if he can mold them into that sort of high-paced style that he's been talking about wanting to run since he took the job. So no chance he leaves town. He's on solid footing with Bulls management.
All right, Cubs are just a game and a half out, 2 games over .500. People still wondering what it's going to take to get them going, although run differential-wise, they're clearly the class of that division. So I don't think anybody's – I know no one's panicking about winning the division, but is there worry that what went wrong with Kyle Schwarber? They send him down to get more at-bats. Did succeed? Is he been made out to be a lot more than he is? What do you think of Schwarber's trip to the minors?
The way I understand Schwarber getting sent to AAA Iowa to work on his swing and straighten things out is this. He's not the he's not the first high sort of profile player. You've heard the names Mickey Mantle, the Mike Trout all mentioned, even Anthony Rizzo, his teammate, who've had to go back down to the minors to straighten things out. It's also been pointed out, and all you have to do is look at the stats, he's had hundreds of minor league at-bats with an average, well, I want to say around 330. So he's a proven, high-achieving minor league player who's somehow been off course with his stroke this year, maybe a little too power-hungry, maybe putting too much pressure on himself. Doesn't matter. He's going to go back to his roots, so to speak, where he really proved that he could be major league caliber, rake it, they hope, for a while in the minors, whether it's 4 games or 4 weeks, and eventually come back up and rejoin this team. He will rejoin this team, whether it's through the All-Star break or maybe a little bit before, or who knows, maybe towards the end of the season, Schwarber will be back on the major league roster.
All right, great stuff as always, Josh Liss in Chicago. Appreciate the time, buddy. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too.